plans for my crazy day. My packed commute. All those unread emails in my inbox. But I'm getting stronger, faster, and pushing myself further every day. I don't care if I'm not like everyone else. This punching bag is the best way to end my day.
Fearless is knowing yoga isn't your style. That's the power of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Federal Employee Program. Learn more about our healthy benefits at fepblue.org/getmore.
Welcome to another episode of Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. You can subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, wherever else you can find podcasts. Make sure you subscribe, leave us a review, tell your friends to subscribe, check out the other podcasts on the Locked On Podcast Network as well. We must point out that this, you know, if you are subscribed on this feed, the entire Locked On Podcast Network is moving over to a new system, a new network, so you're not going to get podcasts on this feed anymore, so you're going to have to go resubscribe to the new feed. We'll tweet out a link to that on our Twitter at Locked On Bulls. So go do that if you want to keep up with Locked On Bulls in whatever form it may take. Other than that, you know, also like us on Facebook. Check out the other podcasts in the Locked On Podcast Network as well. I'm Sean Hyken. With me, as always, Cody Westerland. Cody, the Bulls are back.
They will not go winless this year.
They're not 0-82, not on the table anymore.
Bulls improved to 1-3, the first win of the season, a 91-86 decision over the what I would characterize as basically hapless Atlanta Hawks. Was much of the brand of basketball that was played by them and shared for long stretches by the Bulls as well. But this was another team effort by the Bulls. Robin Lopez had 16 points. Lauri Markkanen, 14 points. All five starters in double figures. David Nwaba off the bench with 15 had an excellent game.
First career double-double, 11 rebounds as well.
Yep, for the Bulls. So a game that probably is how they have to play to win by way of ball distribution and scoring distribution, because they don't have any stars. But man, this one was ugly for really long stretches. The Bulls shot 36%. I think both teams shot 35% in the first half alone. It was a game that really turned late in the game. The Bulls coming up with big plays. They were down one. Justin Holiday had a back cut for a layup. Lauri Markkanen stepped out and hit the big three with 48 seconds to put him up four and kind of seal it. But all I could think of the whole time was just like ping pong balls, because like that's the only dimension in which this game really seemed to matter.
This could come back to bite them later on, because it's very likely that them and the Hawks are going to be very close to each other in the standings. You know, they might finish with the same record, and you want to have that head to head tiebreaker. So
certainly,
we'll see how that ends up playing out.
How important was it for the Bulls to just get a win, though? I guess. In that sense, because look, they're carrying themselves professionally on the court, except for the part where Bobby Portis left Nikola Mirotic, but
just a little exception.
This team out there, they're playing hard when they're playing. You know what I mean? Like, you don't want to see a team like start 2-18, like I predicted as a bold prediction could happen. You don't want any team to start 0-10 and then just be like devastated emotionally.
Remember that year the Nets started like 0-17?
Yeah,
in like 2010.
That happens, and then the culture and attitude is awful from that point forward. So just in the sense of getting a win, what do you think this meant for their attitude and just the work they put in?
Well, here's the thing. You know that, okay, everybody who's paying attention to the Bulls knows what this year is supposed to be. Everybody knows they're going to be bad and that this roster is designed to be bad. But if you're the players, like no player steps out on the court and says, oh, you know, we want to lose this game because we want to get a good lottery pick. No coach. Like, I know these losses are really hard on Fred Hoiberg because he had a lot of success at Iowa State, and then he was kind of up and down his first couple seasons with the Bulls, but they were still kind of in the mix for those playoff spots. This year, you know, I think he knows what's up, but that doesn't mean it's going to be easy for him. So just getting the win and not being one of the last winless teams remaining, I think, is going to be good for the team's morale. And, you know, I don't think this is really going to matter much in the long term, because this team is still going to be bad. They're still going to lose a lot of games. I don't think this is really going to hurt them in that way when it comes to the lottery odds. But, you know, just getting a win, I think, is just good for everybody.
This has all the makings of, I mean, they're on a 20-win pace right now, like 20-60, those last two toss-up games.
Which should be enough to get them where
they need
to be.
The Bulls, let's be clear, they played like a 20-win team tonight, despite getting the win. Look, I thought actually the Bulls played pretty darn good basketball against the Cavs almost the whole time.
Yeah.
They were abysmal against the Raptors for two stretches with that second unit, but otherwise I thought played pretty darn well against the Raptors. The Spurs game was just ugly on so many fronts, but like 10-point loss is competitive. I mean, first half.
And the Spurs are really good.
Yeah, the Spurs are really good. That's an excellent point. But, like, I thought the Bulls had played better basketball for longer stretches the first three games than they did tonight. But this is what happens when you play the Hawks. And look, the Bulls trotted out there with more talent than the Hawks. When Dennis Schroeder doesn't play for the Hawks, like, that needs noted. That he wasn't in. Ersan Ilyasova didn't play either because of a knee injury. So,
and like, we're talking about Ersan Ilyasova not playing as like a big reason why the Hawks are shorthanded. This is like Robin Lopez is by far the best player on either of these rosters tonight.
I would agree with that. I mean, Lauri Markkanen might be better than everyone.
Well, already. Right, but you're, well, I mean, we'll get to Markkanen in a second because yes, this is kind of an interesting game for him. But this is like, this is, yeah, the Hawks are terrible. They literally, like, we look at the starting lineup. So Taurean Prince, Mike Muscala, Dwayne Dedmon, Kent Bazemore, Malcolm Delaney. That might be the only starting lineup in the league that's actually worse than the Bulls. Because at least like Justin Holiday and Robin Lopez, you can look at and say those guys are NBA veteran rotation players. Like this is just this. And you know, at halftime it was 39-37. Like this was just one of the ugliest games.
It was cringeworthy. And I guess I got a kick out of pregame. Mike Budenholzer saying, taking umbrage, I don't know if that's a fair word, but certainly disputing the idea that the Hawks were rebuilding.
He was not here for that at all.
I don't know what the Hawks are doing if they're not rebuilding, but remind me here, what did they do exactly in the offseason? They lost Paul Millsap.
Yeah, Paul Millsap went to Denver.
Jeff Teague to free agency.
No, Jeff Teague was in Indy already.
Or excuse me, yeah, that was 2 years ago when they lost.
They traded Dwight Howard.
They traded Dwight Howard. Like, I don't know what this is if it's not rebuilding, you know what I mean?
Right.
If this is what the Hawks product is and they're trying to do something more than rebuild, goodness, I feel awful for fans in Atlanta because their front office is like pulling a new one over them.
Well, no, this is just, I think what this is, here's the thing, Mike Budenholzer, like this summer, you know, they had kind of that front office upheaval where Wes Wilcox, the GM, stepped down and Travis Schlenk came over from the Warriors. So before that, in the old regime, Mike Budenholzer actually had like a role in basketball operations and player personnel. It was kind of, he wasn't like the top decision maker, but he was like similar to, you know, what Doc Rivers was in with the Clippers, what Stan Van Gundy is in Detroit, what Tom Thibodeau is in Minnesota. And then over the summer when they brought in Travis Schlenk, he kind of stepped back from that role and said, like, you know, I want to just be that. I don't know whose choice it was, but he's just the head coach now. He doesn't actually have a role in the player personnel stuff anymore. But with that being said, like, he's still like, you know, the GM comes in, this new GM comes in, he's like, okay, we're going to tear this down. And, you know, he's still the coach, and he's like, no, I don't view this as a rebuild. I want to win every game. That's kind of what
they really tore it down because Josh McGetty.
Josh McGetty.
Yeah.
No relation to Corey McGetty.
Definitely no relation to Corey McGetty if you look at two of them. Fun fact, a scout on Press Row said of Josh McGetty, looks like that guy should be in eighth grade. And they played him for a four-minute stretch in the second quarter. I'd never heard of his name. I barely heard of his college. I think it was UAB or something, or Huntsville or something or another. I'm not really into the acronym game exactly in that sense, but there were multiple names on this roster. Nicholas Brusuno? I'd never heard of him.
He's a Spurs international guy.
Certainly never heard of him either. I actually like John Collins.
I really like John Collins. I think he's going to be good.
Number 19 overall, I think. Like, that's showing value outside the lottery.
I liked him at Summer League in Las Vegas. I think, you know, he's an athletic big man. He can, you know, he showed some good, like, we kind of knew he could score. I was really impressed with his defense tonight, with his rim protection. You know, he denied Lauri Markkanen at the rim a couple of times. He denied Robin Lopez at the rim a couple of times. Like, I think he's going to be a good player long term. I just want to point out, by the way, that the Bulls gave up the 16th pick in that trade, and they could use a power forward right now, and he's a guy who would have been on the board there. Like,
they only need a power forward because they punched everybody. They did select one at number 7 overall. But I'm with you. John Collins would have been a great addition, no matter where he was. And, hey, red flag on Tom Thibodeau. He should be on the Timberwolves, like John Collins. They took Justin Patton. He got hurt.
He has a broken foot. He's going to be out.
I have a hard time believing that Justin Patton was better than John Collins, even if fully healthy, after watching John Collins through some highlights the first few games and then in person in this one. But hey, Markkanen had bad intentions going to the rim in that first half on John Collins, and he rotated over and he met him there and started kind of a sequence the other way for the Hawks. But I thought that was obviously an interesting play. Look, Markkanen was not efficient in this game. 5 of 13. 2 of 8 on three-pointers, but he had 14 points. He had 12 rebounds, and he became the first Bull since Artis Gilmore, only second one in franchise history to have 2 double-doubles in the first 4 games, according to the Elias Sports Bureau. So even on a night when Lowry wasn't flashing with his three-point range on a consistent basis like he was against the Cavs. Like, he stood out, and he made a difference for this team. Fred Hoiberg praised him for attacking the rim again and again. And look, I thought his handles were loose on a few occasions. He gets a little wayward, loses control of the ball. I think he had a couple turnovers here.
Yeah.
Another one that kind of set him back in the offense because he lost it and they had to go reset.
That's all just rookie stuff, though.
But, like, that's not – you don't expect him. Exactly. You don't expect him to be that way at this stage in his career, four games into his NBA career. But, like, he looked comfortable. Justin Holiday used the word poised, like, a couple times.
I really liked this Markkanen game. This was not, obviously, his most impressive game. He only shot 2 of 8 from three-point range. Like, this – you know, he's had better games when you look at the box score, but I like the fact that he kept shooting. This is something we've harped on with him before. His shot's not falling. He keeps shooting. He goes to the rim. He rebounds. He finds other ways to be effective. He never seems like, you know, he if he misses a few shots in a row, like, his confidence goes down or he's hesitant to shoot after that. This just makes me feel like, because like I said, he's going to have stretches. Like, you know, this was kind of not a great shooting game for him. He's going to have a couple weeks stretch at some point this season where he's in a shooting slump. And what all the available evidence we have, we'll see how he handles it when he actually gets there, but all the available evidence that we have is that when he does get to that point, he's not going to change the way he plays. He's not going to be afraid to shoot because he's had a couple bad shooting games in a row. I like every single thing that we've seen out of Markkanen.
Yeah, and he's a very even-keeled kid. Like, he doesn't seem to get overly excited yet. He does not seem to get down on himself at all. Like,
no.
It's the same. I mean, sometimes it's probably characterized as monotone. Just kind of way he talks after the game. And he said, every shot I shoot, I expect and believe it's going in. So that kind of reflected the confidence again. And look, the Bulls, they drew up a play for him basically with the game on the line. About a minute left, they're up one, 87-86. And they gave Jaren Grant the ball up top and called the pick and pop with Lowry on a high pick and roll there. The Hawks didn't really respect his shooting range at that point, in the sense that they chose not to switch, and by the time they were trying to figure it all out and rotate over, he basically had a wide open look from the left wing, and look, he stepped up right away and shot it. It's funny because he kind of said, coach drew up that play and I expected to be open as soon as he drew it up. Again, said he wasn't fearful at all, but that moment, I feel like it can be something. It matters that a rookie 20-year-old who is the future foundational piece of your rebuild, one of them at least, if maybe not the go-to star, they'll keep looking for those two in years to come. I think it matters that he gets that rep and he lives up to I guess his billing in the
and
moment.
He's not intimidated to get that rep when the play gets drawn up for him. He's just like, okay, I guess I'm just going to shoot this shot and it's going to go in.
Yeah, it was the best thing they could have done. I think the Bulls tried to run a similar play on the ensuing possession after that with Denzel Valentine, and the Hawks defended it better and might have switched or pushed Lowry out of the way a little bit more, and it ended up in a Denzel Valentine ISO. So, like, there will be many levels and stages to this. Now, Lowry had one assist. I don't think he had any in the first three games of the season. So, obviously, something to look for as the year goes on is how he passes out of double teams, how he passes out of switches, who he finds and sets up. Because he doesn't have to be a good passer, rack up gaudy assist numbers. But when teams adjust, he needs to adjust to keep the ball flowing and the offense moving. But yeah, I thought it was, again, a promising game because he looked like he belonged. And, like, I don't think we need to say that probably anymore. Like, if he looks like he belongs in the preseason and looks like he belongs through four regular season games, he's probably going to keep looking like he belongs. Like, LeBron's not offering that praise for him the other night if Lowry Markkanen doesn't belong.
I think what this does is, you know, people like me are never going to stop harping on the Jordan Bell thing. But.
just shameless here. Just, you're marking your territory.
No, well, right. But,
throwing it down.
Well, right. But
you'll never come.
What I'm saying is, so besides that, you know, the other potential thing that could have come out of that night was all of the people, like, let's say Markkanen struggled early on, and, you know, we have to hear, like, oh, well, they could have drafted Dennis Smith. They could have, you know, they could have drafted Malik Monk.
The
Dennis Smith
thing is a very fair argument.
Like, they could have drafted whoever. Markkanen, just from all the, again, it's only four games into his NBA career. We don't know how it's going to play out. But Markkanen, from what we've seen, is good enough that Bulls fans should be happy with the player they got and not thinking about, like, who they didn't draft or who they could have drafted. Markkanen, like, from everything we've seen, Markkanen's the real deal, and that's a huge thing for the Bulls.
Yeah, look, and the Jordan Bell thing will go down in infamy no matter what, I feel like. One way or the other, somehow this is going to happen. It will always be a point in the narrative and storyline to touch back on. Again, because it reflects on player evaluation, it reflects on the approach amid a rebuild to prioritize money over other things in that sense. But hearkening back to draft night, what matters is not that. I don't think it matters that they gave up a 16 pick either. What matters is, can Lauri Markkanen develop into an all-star? That matters.
Like, in the Eastern Conference, I don't think it's an unthinkable proposition that maybe he does.
And then it's, how far can Zach LaVine go? Is he healthy? And what can he ascend to? I think he's...
And then who do they get in the next draft?
Yeah, and what they get out of Chris Dunn. So out of those things, we've got no returns on Zach LaVine. We've got pretty much no returns on Chris Dunn. I think it's good early start that you got one good early return on Lauri Markkanen for being something. And the I guess the story of the day, too, off the court for Lowry, I guess, kind of the buzz, was he asked permission from Brian Scalabrine, former fan favorite
Bulls
Chicago
legend.
Bull forward.
The White Mamba.
Little used nickname, the White Mamba, I believe, by in Chicago, yeah. Right? That's when his nickname came about. Markkanen actually asked Brian Scalabrine permission to wear number 24 because Scalabrine was the previous Bull to wear number 24, and they had met in the pre-draft process.
Because he worked for the Celtics now as part of their thing, and they were, I guess, back when the Celtics had the number 3 pick before they, or back after they traded for the number 3 pick from Philadelphia.
They were working
a bunch of guys out, so they probably looked at Markkanen. And
Scalabrine actually presented Markkanen with a number 24 Scalabrine jersey before the draft, unbeknownst to the Bulls and everyone.
Was it a Bulls or Celtics jersey?
No, it was a Bulls jersey. It was a Scalabrine Bulls jersey. Unbeknownst to everyone, there's an Instagram photo of it up from like June 20th, which was a few days before the draft. And he presented it to him, and no one had any idea the Bulls were actually going to end up with Markkanen. And then a few nights later, they have Markkanen. So Markkanen's like, hey, I met this guy. Talked to him a couple times. Maybe I should shoot him a text and, you know, ask him if I can wear his jersey. And Markkanen said that he told him that he could be the Finnish Mamba, and that's what Scalabrine tabbed him as well, the Finnish Mamba, Lauri Markkanen.
Now, speaking of nobody knew he was going to go to the Bulls, I want to just go back to draft night. You know, we were sitting in the Advocate Center after all the stuff happened. We did the conference call with Markkanen, and he said he never worked out for the Bulls. He never interviewed with the Bulls. He had no idea that they were even interested in him. And how much credit are we giving Garin Paks for how good Markkanen has been?
Maybe
so
they
far?
Just called Brian Scalabrine after the Celtics.
Do we think
Jason
they just like
Tatum
looked at
him and then the Bulls? Didn't the Bulls agree to acquire the 7th pick around the time the 5th or 6th pick was made?
Do we think they just kind of looked at mock draft and like, Markkanen seems like the consensus pick here? Yeah,
no, they picked up the phone and they called Scal and they go, Scal, what do you think of this marketing guy? And Scal said he'll be the Finnish Mamba right there. That's all it took.
That's all it took.
No.
If they're smart, they'll run a campaign around this. They already started calling him the Finisher with the two ends.
Yeah, I like the Finnish Mamba
better. When Scal gives you a nickname, that's like one of my favorite quotes of all time. I don't remember if you were here yet by then. This was the 13-14 season at some point in there. I don't remember if this was, because you got here in the middle of that year. But this was Scalabrine. This is the year that he was an assistant coach for the Celtics. He was an assistant coach for the Warriors.
Okay.
And he, because this was the last Mark Jackson year with the Warriors, he was an assistant coach for Mark Jackson. And he, the Warriors are playing here. And so they come out of the tunnel and he's getting all the Scalabrine chants, like the fans are going crazy. And we asked Joe about it after the game. And Joe was like, man, everybody makes fun of Scalabrine because he's white and he has red hair and he looks goofy, but that guy worked his ass off and he can really play. It was like, well, I'll have to go back and like pull up the actual quote, but it
Joe
was like one of the
Noah going to
it
bat.
Was just like one of the it was one of the greatest like locker room moments I've ever had.
He certainly embraced that. I also got a kick out of Markkanen saying he was asked, what would you have done if Scalabrine said no on the jersey? And it's like he looked at the reporters, he's like, huh. I never really thought about that if he said no. And he goes, I probably would have kept looking for a new one, I guess.
Would he have asked Derrick Rose if he could wear number one, or Anthony Morrow, or Michael Carter Williams?
Probably only people he had previously met with Bulls numbers, but all the other numbers that he'd worn in his life, he said, were taken up or retired. So maybe, if all goes to plan with the rebuild, Lauri Markkanen's 24 can be retired in the Raptors. But you were
one over Jordan, just like how Kobe switched to 24.
You pointed out how much credit to give the front office. Correct. It's my understanding they didn't scout Lowry Markin extensively.
You know what I'll give them credit for? You know what I will give the front office credit for? David Nwaba. He's good.
He is. He had 15.
He's an NBA rotation player.
I think the Bulls need credit for Lowry Markin thing, though. Okay.
Okay.
Like there is that narrative going around like wildfire. Like they just lucked into him. Okay. I guess you can say that if you want, because they admitted that like when they had the 16 pick, their frame of mind at the time was probably not that they were going to end up with Lowry Markkanen. But they knew enough to know that A, he was good. He could take guys off the dribble, get to the rim, and finish with two hands, which we've seen so far, which was important. And they had the vision that he would fit Fred Hoiberg's system. So if you want to criticize him for not doing extensive scouting work on him, you also have to or at least give them credit for the fact that they didn't do extensive scouting work and they still saw that he would fit the team. So I do think they need credit there. David Nwaba?
He's good.
Got him off waivers from the Lakers?
Yeah.
I am not there with you yet. I'm not calling him good.
I think he's a rotation player.
He had 15 points.
He
5
plays
of 8
hard.
From the field.
Good defender.
Oh, he plays hard.
He's a good defender.
Good defender on the ball. He's a very good defender on the ball. I think he wanders a little bit too much off the ball. And isn't a huge difference maker off the ball yet. Like you want him just wreaking havoc in passing lanes and stuff off the ball. But like he's not LeBron. He can't play free safety. But man,
breaking news: David Nwaba is not LeBron.
Yeah, I mean in the defensive sense, he's not. He can't roam like LeBron on defense. Correct.
That is a scorching take.
That is the coldest take of the day.
We should also talk about. I mean, we touched on kind of everything we need to for this game because there's some new Nico Bobby stuff.
Yeah. Nico Meritich is open to being traded by the Bulls and leaving Chicago, according to reports from the Chicago Tribune and the Chicago Sun-Times. There are varying degrees of how intense this desire is, but it has been characterized by both papers through one prism, at least as it's me or him with Bobby Portis. And by that, I mean Nico's camp, according to the reports have expressed the desire that either Nico has to get traded or Bobby Portis has to get traded or waived or something. Just signaling with certainty that right now Nico Meritich views this relationship with Bobby Portis as completely untenable and unsalvageable.
And
this is a big departure because Nico always had said he wanted to stay in Chicago. He was really happy to get that contract to remain in Chicago. And everything we'd heard from the Bulls so far was, yeah, we'll get them together, slap hands, pat each other on the back, say, I'm sorry, my bad, and move forward.
I feel like that's really not going to be enough in a situation where one guy put the other guy in a hospital for weeks and months at a time and broke his face and gave him... Like, I feel like that's not going to be something where he can go and be like, oh, I'm sorry, I did this, and Nico can be just like, okay, it's all good, you're forgiving. This was such a blow to Nico's career in terms of, you know, the
huge blow.
So like this, he was set to be the opening night starter, and now like he's not going to get his starting spot back if Mark. Even when he comes back, he's not going to get his starting spot back if Mark and keeps playing the way he's playing. And, you know, this is just.
And
if I were Nico, I'd kind of be over it at this point too. Just all I mean, as much as like, you know, he likes Chicago, his family likes Chicago, he wants to live in Chicago, he wants to be here. You know, every year something happens with him. He had a kind of an inconsistent role under Tibbs the first year. He had the weird, you know, stuff with his role getting jerked around the first couple years under Hoiberg. And now this happens. If I were him, I'd be kind of over it, too.
It's just been complete bullshit for him that is not self-inflicted. It's organizational.
No, right. If I were him, I'd be like...
He has ever...
I mean, I still think Nico is talented enough that he can be an NBA rotation player somewhere. I just... think, you know, if I were him, I would kind of want a fresh start somewhere else after all this stuff that's happened too, especially...
Well, I mean, hold up, though. If you're Nico, though, and you do like Chicago, and you can say, hey, look, I'm the most unfortunate one here. I'm the one that got my face wrecked. And, I mean, obviously the Bulls have made clear that he played somewhat of a role as an instigator, too. But clearly Bobby Portis was the one in the wrong here more than anything whatsoever. Completely unacceptable. If you're Nico... I mean, you can go to the Bulls and be like, I have that no trade clause, so go move Bobby Portis. You know what I mean? Like, go move Bobby Portis. He's the one that had the most wrongdoing, and you guys need to take care of me more. And see what they do. I mean, They might say okay, and then behind the scenes just keep working on Nico trades, and then string it along and not move Bobby anywhere, and then put the ball back in Nico's court. But as for like an opening salvo as to what to do in this situation, Nico can express that, like, you need to move Bobby, and it sounds like he is expressing that. In addition with saying, if you don't move Bobby, get rid of me because I'm just sick of this BS. You know what I mean?
Which I don't blame him for. I mean, so what trade, like, do we feel like there is for him? Because the one that came to mind, just me playing, you know, playing with it in my head, because Nico does have a team option for next year. So a team theoretically could, if Nico is willing to be traded without a guarantee that that option was going to be picked up, which is a big if. I don't know kind of what his reps are thinking, whether that's a big part of it, or if he just wants to get out of Chicago with this situation. But, you know, the Lakers are a team that came to mind. Like, they're looking to get off of, like, some long-term money because they think they can get LeBron next year. So if they could get, like, Jordan Clarkson's contract back, which has a few years left on it, and he's a serviceable guard, he would be
That'd
an upgrade.
Be a steal of a deal for the. He'd be the best lead guard the Bulls.
Right,
have.
that would be kind of a move that I think would make some sense for the Bulls and for the Lakers, because, you know, the Lakers, that they, you know, they have Lonzo as their long term guy, and they also want to get off of that money because they think they can get like LeBron and Paul George next year or whoever, like the big stars are that change teams. And then the Bulls, you know, he would be their best point guard. He would be a guy that they could, you know, he's making more money than the Lakers want to pay for what they want to do with their cap space.
Do you know how many million a year he's making?
13 or 14. I'll have to look it up. But it's not that much. It's not, like, close to max or anything like that.
Yeah, and do you know his contract status? How long is he under contract?
I believe 2 more years after this one.
Yeah, like, that's a guy the Bulls should, if that's on the table, the Bulls should certainly do that. I don't know that would be on the table because, I mean, Nico's trade value as far as production on the floor right now is really low again. You know what I mean? Because of his situation and inconsistencies in the past, which, again, this current situation is just not his fault whatsoever. And it, one of the most unfortunate, even in Chicago sports history that I remember, so I'm not saying in the 60s and stuff, 70s, but stuff I remember, like, there's been unfortunate situations and 10 years gone really bad here, but usually it's not organizationally inflicted upon someone to such a degree as it is Nico Meritage. You know what I mean? Like, it's just absurd. 2 occasions when you're dating back to the botched appendectomy, basically, that cost him much of his second season and confidence and weight and everything, and probably set him back that summer too. Yeah. A little bit, you know what I mean? That was one of those where Nico admitted that, like, it was the scariest medical situation of his life.
I'll bet this is the scarier medical situation. Yeah,
this stuff matters, and it makes me shake my head, and I guess I don't know what to say, but I don't think Bobby and Nico are ever going to play another basketball game together, unless they're opposition.
I think you're probably right about that.
I don't know how this plays out. I mean, Casey Johnson of the Tribune reported that Nico can't even be traded until January 15th because of the contract.
Well, right, no, yeah, because
restricted free agency.
Yeah.
So at this point, they gave him an initial 4 to 6 week time frame. He's still concussed, so he can't even start looking into surgery until those concussion symptoms subside.
That could easily go till January.
Yeah, I could easily see him just not even playing or practicing with the team and just staying home till mid-January. And then by then, maybe we'll see if they trade him. If that's the case, if like mid-December rolls around and Nico isn't even back around the team practicing anything like that, late December, that's probably a sign, and Bobby Portis is still here, that's probably a sign that the Bulls are going to move Nico on January 15th or 16th.
Well, Bobby is going to still be here because the first game that he's allowed to play again after the suspension is November 7th against Toronto.
Yeah.
Like, that, you know, they need bodies at power forward. They've been playing Quincy Pondexter at power forward, so Bobby is going to be playing, and as soon as...
They can go claim someone off waivers and plug them in at power forward or make a low-profile trade.
They're going to play Bobby. They're going to play Bobby when he gets back.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, at some point, there is a time frame there where if you don't trade Bobby by a certain date, it seems to be getting pretty... If you don't trade Bobby by the time Nikola Mirotic needs to show up at practice, healthy, whatever day that is, you have an awful situation and you're mismanaging it if they haven't had that sit-down. It doesn't look like they're going to have that sit-down. So you have until the day Nico is healthy and ready to play to evaluate Bobby and put him in games. And then that's where your decision comes to a crashing head. You know what I mean? And whenever that is, they can string along the Nico medical situation because, again, I think we both said from the start, it feels like more than 4 to 6 weeks. And that was before the concussion symptoms continued.
And Hoiberg said that his next checkup in the concussion thing is going to be until next week. So let's assume the best-case scenario, he's out of the concussion protocol next week. Then they have the surgery, and let's say it takes 4 to 6 weeks. So it's going to be a while before Nico's back.
Yeah, so... there does come a day of reckoning on what the Bulls have to do there, whether to sit down between them or exit if one of them. That date is just very fluid. January 15th, obviously, a date to keep an eye on, too. Wouldn't surprise me to see Nico just stay away from the team until January 15th and then get traded, to be honest, you know? And then bring Bobby back and play him and let him get minutes behind Lauri Markkanen. Anything else we need to touch on? On the basketball front?
I think that kind of takes care of it.
That might be taking care of Locked On Bulls for good, too.
We're going to leave it open. We still, you know, there's still some details we have to get ironed out here. But no matter what happens with this, go subscribe to the new feed. We're going to tweet it out because we're switching over to a new thing. The whole Locked On Network has joined the Panoply family of podcasts, which I think is going to be a great thing for the network. So we'll tweet out the new feed. If you were subscribed to this old feed, it's not going to work anymore. This will be the last episode you can get on that feed. So go subscribe to the new feed. We'll tweet out all that stuff for you.
Yeah, and Locked On Bulls will continue in some form. I have no idea who that's going to be. Not going to be Sean. Not now, because he's moving back.
It's not
going to
be me.
On Sunday.
May or may not be you.
Like I mentioned in the last episode, leaning toward no on me just because of a... many circumstances, the most important being that I loved doing this with Sean and thought it worked. And there's logistical stuff, too. I thought he helped make it great. But I did want to give a huge shout-out and just thank you to all the listeners.
And to David Locke.
Yeah, we'll get to him, too, in a second. That was wonderful to be able to ask to have that opportunity. But, like, I didn't expect that much feedback from... listeners.
People really like the podcast, and that we do not take that for granted.
The vision Locke has is terrific.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? And it takes time. It's going to keep growing. Yeah. You know what I mean? To get everyone involved and in that rhythm and get everything straightened out. Like, for example, what's the best platform to host the podcast? They're making a good move now. So excellent things can keep happening for the network. So huge, huge thank you to him. For this. Huge thank you to you, buddy, for doing this so much.
Yeah, absolutely.
This was a lot of fun. I think we both got better at talking about the Bulls.
I don't think this is the last time we're ever going to be on a podcast together.
It's certainly not going to be the last time we're going to be on a podcast.
Whatever
form. We're both going to keep writing about the NBA for years to come. We'll keep crossing paths, I'm sure. Down the way, you'll be back to Chicago to visit. I need to get to Portland sometime.
You should get to Portland.
That's a city I've never been to.
You got to do it.
That's a state I've never been to, I think.
Gotta do it.
Haven't been up to the Great Northwest too much. But, again, thank you very, very, very much for all your tweets, your emails, your criticisms, your thank yous. For the people who said you liked it, that's awesome. For the people who pointed out how we should get better, that's awesome,
too. We appreciate
that
because that was helpful.
I did, I think, correct a few things and get better when people would point out and say these things were annoying. So... again, throw constructive criticism our way on podcast writing. It's always good. But we do love you all. Thank you for listening all the time. This was Locked On Bulls, and thanks for coming along with us on the ride. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, thanks for listening, everybody.